Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back, everyone. Today, we're setting out on a bit of a mission, really. We want to rescue a huge piece of European history from, well, from a really persistent historical cliché.
We're diving into the Holy Roman Empire, the HRE.
Exactly. And for centuries, it feels like this massive, complex entity has just been boiled down to one pretty cutting joke.
You mean Voltaire's line, that it was neither holy nor Roman nor an empire.
That's the one. And that quip kind of became the dominant narrative, didn't it? That the HRE was always sort of destined to fail, too weak, too messy.
Just doomed from the start, basically. The declinist view, as historians call it.
Right. What if that whole idea, the premise behind the joke, is just wrong? What if we shouldn't be judging the HRE against the model of, say, France or England, a centralized nation state?
What if it was something else entirely, something that actually worked remarkably well on its own terms?
That's exactly what we're exploring today. We're going to try and dismantle that old view using the, frankly, monumental work of historian Joachim Whaley.
Whaley completely flips the script. He argues the empire's real identity, its functional core, was being a Rätsgemeinschaft.
A community of law.
Precisely. A system built not to centralize power like a modern state, but to manage incredible diversity and complexity through legal means. And the really fascinating thing, I think, is how relevant this feels now.
You mean for things like?
Yeah.
Well, modern federal systems, like Germany itself.
Yes, or even more complex setups like the European Union, you know, trying to coordinate diverse members, manage shared sovereignty through legal frameworks.
It's not just dusty old history, then. It's almost like finding a 1,000-year-old blueprint for some of today's biggest governance challenges.
Absolutely. So who's the historian who took on this this mountain of historical consensus?
That would be Professor Emeritus Joachim Whaley. He's based at Cambridge, a fellow of the British Academy, and, well, pretty much the leading authority on early modern German history.
And what gives him this different angle? Because, as you said, the old view was really entrenched.
Well, for a long time, German history, especially the story of the HRE, was written by 19th century historians.
Yeah.
And they had an agenda, didn't they?
Oh, definitely. German nationalism. They needed the old empire to look like a failure.
Right, because that made the rise of a strong, unified, centralized state, think Prussia, later Germany, seem like the necessary, inevitable outcome. Progress.
So the old complex HRE had to be the bad old days.
Exactly. Whaley's shift comes from decades of meticulous work digging deep into German archives. This lets him step outside that whole nationalist framework.
He takes a what you'd call a post-nationalist view.
Yeah. He judges the HRE based on its goals, things like maintaining internal peace, stability, managing disputes, not on whether it looked like Bismarck's Germany.
So things like shared sovereignty, negotiation, complexity. Those aren't weaknesses in Whaley's view.
No, they're the design features. They're the system's core strength, in a way.
Okay, so let's zoom out a bit. What's the central argument of Whaley's work, boiled down?
The main thesis is that the HRE wasn't a failed state, but actually a remarkably resilient and viable political system for centuries. Its core wasn't military might, but a sophisticated legal and constitutional framework.
Designed specifically to keep the peace and manage conflict between, well, a dizzying number of members, right?
Totally. You had everything from powerful prince electors and dukes down to tiny imperial knights, which is a castle and a village, plus all those independent free cities.
How on earth do you stop that from just dissolving into constant civil war?
Through law. That's Whaley's answer. He focuses particularly on the early modern era, say, from the big imperial reforms around the 1490s, right up to Napoleon pulling the plug in 1806.
And during that long period, the system ran on this complex constitutional machinery. You had the emperor on one side, the territorial rulers on the other, this dualism they talk about.
And the Reichstag, the imperial diet, as the big meeting place for negotiation.
But the real engine room, the thing that made it a Rätsgemeinschaft in practice, was the court system.
Ah, okay, this is where it gets really interesting, the legal side.
Absolutely crucial. They had not one, but two imperial supreme courts. The Reichskammergericht and the Reichshofrat.
Two? Why two? Wouldn't that just cause confusion or rivalry?
You'd think so, but it seems like it was actually clever constitutional design, checks and balances.
How did that work?
Well, the Reichskammergericht, the imperial cameral court, was set up by the Diet, the territories, to be independent of the emperor. Its main job was upholding this big peace agreement we'll get to.
Okay, so that's the estates court, sort of.
In a way, Then you had the Rafschafrat, the Imperial Aulic Council, which was run by the emperor himself based in Vienna.
Ah, the Emperor's Court.
Right. And crucially, they had overlapping jurisdiction in many areas. So if you felt one court wasn't giving you a fair shake or was biased, you might have grounds to appeal to the other.
So they kept each other honest, in a sense. Neither the emperor nor the big princes could completely dominate the legal system.
That seems to be the idea. It forced compromise and adherence to procedure. The whole stability of the empire really rested on channeling conflicts into these courts, turning power politics into lawsuits.
That's quite a feat. So if this system was so sophisticated, so resilient, how did it end? If it wasn't internal collapse?
Whaley is really clear on this. It wasn't internal decay. It wasn't that the system became obsolete and just crumbled.
It was outside for.
Overwhelming external force, specifically revolutionary in Napoleonic France. Napoleon's armies didn't just defeat the empire's members militarily, they systematically dismantled the institutions, the courts, the diet that made the HRE function. It was destroyed from the outside.
Okay, that's a radically different story than the usual faded away narrative. Let's maybe unpack this chronologically, phase by phase, see how this legal machinery actually worked. Where do we start? The foundation period.
Yeah, let's start around 1493 to 1555. This is the era of the Great Rice Reform, the imperial reform, especially under Emperor Maximilian I.
And the goal here wasn't like creating a unified Germany.
No, not at all. The goal was much more pragmatic. Finding a way for this incredibly diverse collection of territories to function together to ensure internal peace and collective security. Survival through cooperation, basically.
And the big achievement from this period.
Constitutionally, it's the Perpetual Public Peace, the Jüngerlandfried of 1495. This sounds a bit dry, maybe, but it was revolutionary.
What did it actually do?
It fundamentally outlawed private warfare, feuding, the right that nobles had basically claimed for centuries to just attack their neighbors if they had a grievance.
So taking disputes off the battlefield and forcing them into court.
Exactly. Imagine telling hundreds, thousands of petty lords and powerful dukes, no, you can't just raise your banners and fight anymore, you have to sue. That's a massive shift.
But just declaring peace isn't enough, right? You need enforcement. That's where the courts come in.
Precisely. The Jüngerlandfried needed teeth, and that's why the Reichskammergericht, the Imperial Cameral Court, was established alongside it to enforce this peace.
And Whaley's evidence that this actually worked.
It's the case files. The court was incredibly active. And crucially, it wasn't just the big players using it. Tiny villages, individual knights, small towns, they all routinely brought cases against powerful neighbors, and often won.
So it wasn't just a talking shop. It was a functioning legal system people believed in and used.
That's the argument. It shows the HRE was a genuine legal order, a Rijksgemeinschaft in action.
Okay, so they established this system for peace based on law,
Hmm.
and then almost immediately, bam, the Reformation hits.
Yeah, talk about a stress test. Probably the biggest upheaval in Europe for 1,000 years.
And the traditional story is that this religious split just shattered the empire, right? Irreparably divided it.
That's the common narrative. But Whaley argues something more nuanced. Yes, it was a massive crisis, an existential threat. But the empire's constitutional framework, surprisingly, proved capable of managing it.
Managing. How do you manage a split like that?
Through another constitutional settlement. Instead of total breakdown, they eventually hammered out the Peace of Augsburg in 1555.
And that's where we get that famous, if slightly awkward, Latin phrase.
Cuius regio eius religio.
Whose realm, his religion.
Exactly. Now, this wasn't modern tolerance or individual religious freedom, not by a long shot. But it was an incredibly pragmatic, pioneering legal fix.
What did it actually allow?
It essentially allowed Lutheranism and Catholicism to coexist legally within the empire. It kicked the decision down to the individual rulers. If you were the prince, you decided if your territory was officially Catholic or Lutheran.
So it bought peace by accepting division, in a way, a legal framework for coexistence.
Pretty much. And it worked remarkably well for over 60 years. It kept the empire together, kept it functioning despite the deep religious chasm.
It sounds like the HRE's specialty was the constitutional workaround, always finding a legal patch rather than letting things explode.
That's a good way to put it. Which leads us inevitably to the next big test, the 30 Years' War, 1618 to 1648. If the system was so good at workarounds, how did that catastrophe happen?
Yeah, 30 years of utter devastation. How does Whaley explain that?
He argues it wasn't fundamentally a failure of the system's design, but rather a constitutional crisis within the system. It kicked off because Emperor Ferdinand II tried to do something the system wasn't built for.
Which was?
He tried to impose Catholic absolutism. He tried to roll back the compromises of Augsburg and centralize power in a way that directly violated the empire's traditions of shared governance and the established legal rights of the Protestant princes.
So the emperor basically tried to break the rules of the game.
Exactly. He pushed too hard against the established constitutional balance, and that internal breakdown quickly spiraled outwards.
It became a European free-for-all.
Right. Other powers like Sweden and France jumped in, partly for religious reasons, but mostly for geopolitical ones wanting to curb the power of the Habsburg Emperor. The war became a fight over the very nature of the empire. Would it be a more centralized Habsburg-dominated monarchy, or would it remain a cooperative federal system?
And weirdly, the sheer horror of the war actually ended up reinforcing the value of the old system.
That's the paradox, Whaley points out. The utter devastation created this powerful desire among almost all the German rulers, Catholic and Protestant alike, to go back, to restore the old system of checks and balances, of law, of negotiation.
They realized the problem wasn't the messy, decentralized system itself, but the attempt to override it.
Precisely. They learned the hard way that trying to impose unity by force was far worse than living with the complicated compromises of the Reichsgemeinschaft.
Which brings us to the period after the war, the Baroque Empire, 1648 to about 1740. And this is where Whaley makes perhaps his boldest claim.
Yes. The Peace of Westphalia, 1648. Wow. Everyone learns this treaty was basically the death certificate of the Holy Roman Empire the moment Germany became hopelessly fragmented.
Right. The nail in the coffin. But Whaley says...
He says it was the cornerstone of the empire's renewed success and stability.
Wait, how? How can a treaty that confirmed the fragmentation, the German liberties of all the princes, be a cornerstone of success?
Because it depends on what you measure success by. Westphalia didn't just confirm the rights of the territories. It crucially clarified and reinforced the rules of the imperial constitution. It formalized the procedures of the diet, the courts, the balance of power.
So it took the often messy, customary rules of the HRE and wrote them down, made them binding international law almost.
Essentially, yes. It locked in the federal cooperative nature of the empire. It prevented future emperors from trying what Ferdinand II did. It secured the rights of smaller states against the larger ones.
So rather than killing the empire, it successfully re-engineered it constitutionally for a new era, made it stable because it was decentralized and law-based.
That's the argument. And Whaley contends that for the next century or so, the post-Westphalian HRE was actually a remarkable success on its own terms. It provided internal peace, legal recourse for its members, and functioned as a collective defensive federation. It worked.
Okay, but it didn't last forever. We get to the final century, roughly 1740 to 1806. What started to go wrong internally? The system was based on cooperation, but what happens if key members stop cooperating?
That's exactly the issue. The problem becomes what historians call German dualism.
Meaning Austria versus...
Prussia. The meteoric rise of Prussia under Frederick the Great created this intense, unmanageable rivalry at the very top of the empire. You had two dominant members, Austria and Prussia, acting more like hostile superpowers within the system than partners in it.
So they started paralyzing the institutions, like the diet.
Increasingly, yes. The political cooperation needed to make the whole thing hum started to break down because of this constant Austro-Prussian tension. The legal system, the courts, they still function, people still sued each other, but the high-level political consensus was fraying.
So the system was definitely under strain, politically limping because of this internal rivalry, but even that wasn't the fatal blow.
No. As we said earlier, that goes back to Napoleon. The system was weakened, yes, but it was Napoleon who actively destroyed it. His military victories were one thing, but the crucial part was his deliberate dismantling of the institutions.
Forcing the emperor to abdicate, dissolving the diet, reorganizing territory.
Exactly. He pulled the institutional pillars out from under it. It was conquered and deliberately abolished by an external power. It didn't just collapse from internal contradictions.
That really has reframed the whole narrative.
Yeah.
Okay, let's try and pull out some of the big underlying themes from Whaley's perspective. What's theme number one?
I think the absolute core is the rejection of the declinist narrative and anachronism. We just have to stop judging the HRE by the standards of a 19th or 20th century centralized nation state. It wasn't trying to be that.
And its sheer longevity, 1,000 years, more or less, is proof that it was successful, just in a different way.
Right. And that makes you think, doesn't it? What modern systems or organizations are we maybe unfairly judging as failures because they don't fit a preconceived mold? Maybe success looks different sometimes.
That leads nicely into the second theme. The empire as a legal community, Arrestgemeinschaft.
Its strength, its stability, came not from a powerful central army or bureaucracy, but from this shared commitment to law, to procedure, to resolving disputes through the courts.
The juridification of conflict, as you called it. Turning fights into lawsuits.
Yeah. The genius was building a system where legal process was seen as more legitimate, more effective than violence. That's a huge achievement. How fundamental is the rule of law to our own society's stability today? It's everything.
And the third theme. I'd say adaptability and resilience. Think about the massive crises the HRE weathered over the centuries. The investiture controversy back in the Middle Ages, the Reformation, the 30 Years' War.
Existential threats, really.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And yet the system didn't shatter. It adapted, it bent, it reformed, it found constitutional workarounds. That flexibility, that willingness to adjust the rules rather than break entirely, was maybe its greatest strength. Rigid systems often snap under pressure. That's a great point. Flexible systems endure. Whaley uses some really punchy statements to summarize these ideas, doesn't he?
He does. They really encapsulate the shift in thinking.
Let's touch on maybe three core paraphrased ideas. First, the Holy Roman Empire was a successful, non-national system of multi-layered government that prioritized law and peace over centralized power.
That just completely changes the metric of success, doesn't it? Success equals internal peace and legal order, not centralization and conquest.
Okay, second one, tackling that big treaty. The Peace of Westphalia was not the tombstone of the empire. It was the cornerstone of its renewed and remarkably stable existence for the next 150 years.
It forces us to reevaluate that whole post-1648 period, to see it not as decay, but as a functioning, stable federal system doing what it was designed to do, protect its members through law.
And the third, about its end. The empire did not collapse under the weight of its own contradictions. It was destroyed by the unprecedented military and ideological power of revolutionary France.
Yeah, emphasizing the external demolition rather than internal failure. It was murdered. It didn't die of old age.
So taking all this revisionist history, how does it actually apply to us today? What are the real world takeaways?
Well, the most obvious one, perhaps, is for modern federal governance. The HRE is almost like a long-term historical case study for something like the European Union.
You see the parallels. Shared sovereignty, multiple layers of government, constant negotiation between members.
Absolutely. And the critical role of legal institutions like the European Court of Justice in mediating disputes and upholding the rules, the HRE shows both the potential and the inherent difficulties of making such complex systems work. Subsidiarity, you know, making decisions at the lowest possible level was key then too.
And beyond the EU.
Well, think about managing deep diversity. The empire, especially after the Reformation, had to figure out how Catholics and Protestants could live together in one political entity without killing each other.
The Peace of Augsburg being the prime example.
Exactly. It wasn't perfect, but it was a pragmatic legal framework that allowed for coexistence. That holds lessons for any modern society grappling with deep religious, ethnic, or political divisions. How do you build structures that allow difference to exist within unity?
And maybe on a smaller scale, too, like organizational level.
Yeah, I think the theme of organizational resilience applies. The HRE's ability to survive massive shocks by adapting its structures, by relying on negotiation and established procedures. It suggests that flexible network systems can sometimes be far more durable than rigid top-down hierarchies. Adaptability is key to survival.
So reflecting on all this, what's the biggest surprise or the most striking thing you take away from Whaley's perspective?
For me, honestly, it's the sheer success and sophistication of the imperial courts. We tend to think of pre-modern justice as arbitrary or weak, but the Reichskammergericht and Reichshofrat handled thousands upon thousands of cases.
And people actually abided by the rulings most of the time.
Largely, yes. The fact that these incredibly diverse, often rivalrous entities from princes down to peasants consistently chose litigation over warfare for centuries, that's a staggering achievement in nonviolent conflict resolution. That juridification really is the overlooked triumph.
Yeah, that really resonates. For me, the biggest takeaway is the paradigm shift itself. Realizing how much our view of the HRE has been colored by the later rise of the nation state, Whaley forces us to see it on its own terms as this unique, complex, surprisingly functional system.
A system whose legacy, things like federalism, the rule of law as a guarantor of peace, protecting minority rights within a larger structure, feels incredibly relevant today.
It really does. It wasn't a failure waiting to happen. It was a different kind of success, violently interrupted. Makes you wonder what other parts of history we need to look at with fresh eyes.
Absolutely. A lot to think about there.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acatra Foundation.